it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast,
a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
B-F-F-T. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with The Bald-Faced Truth.
Does the voice need to say I'm at the home studio? Can I just be at the studio? Why do we have to single that out? Jonathan Smith is joining us, Oregon State football coach. Where are you right now? Set the scene for us.
Yeah, I'm sitting in my office at my desk. Was just making a cut up here, a couple snaps to show the team tomorrow night. Yeah, it's nice. I got good windows looking over the stadium. Yeah.
I've been in that office.
Clouds, but no rain.
I've been in that office. I think, is it the same office that Coach Erickson had when he was there in Riley, or did it move when they renovated?
It is the same office. They actually made it a little bigger. They removed an office to create a larger office here for the head coach. But I remember the same thing, same corner. Yeah. You know, when Riley and Erickson were here when I was a player, and now it's a little different. I'm sitting in the chair.
I remember Erickson looking out the window and saying, you know, I got a good job. And he was looking out onto the field. You guys had just kind of been off all that success. And now he looks back and he says he never should have left. He should still be there. So is there, like, this is Thanksgiving week. Like, you know, the gratitude you have is being a player who played there, and now you're sitting in the big, big office.
Yeah, it's quite a story, and definitely a lot of people involved. In my life to get me to the point I'm at, and had a bunch of good memories as a player here. And even my coaching career at different stops, really in the Northwest the entire time, from, you know, Idaho to Montana, Boise, Seattle, and now here. It's been quite a blast.
What was it like to have Erickson, like, in a meeting or in a film session? And, you know, you got a guy who's got that experience in national championships and all that football in his head.
Yeah, it's a... He was a great storyteller. You know, he could crystallize a coaching point by a story or a play back in the day. And, you know, he's always pretty confident, you know, and I think that instilled in his players if we stuck to the plan and you know, got a complete trust in him to execute, and what we were planning would work. And I think yeah, it showed up on the field.
Now, you're in a film session with guys. Technology has advanced. I'm imagining now you probably have the ability to do things that you couldn't see as a player. Is there a danger in watching too much film?
Yeah, I think you can. You can overload the information. You can start chasing ghosts. And, like, what I mean by that is, well, they've done it one time. And 99 other times they've done something different. But this one time, you know, you get a lot. But the technology is a great tool. You can splice these things from, you know, showing a snap of our game and then showing a snap from across the country, Alabama versus somebody that's running a similar play, to really grab the kids' attention. And our coaches do a good job of using all the, you know, technology we got.
You guys battled. You made the plays. You won the game. What is that like, getting into the locker room after a win like that last week?
Oh, yeah, it's a bunch of fun. I mean, I was kind of the last one in after clearing the field, and those guys are hooping and hollering before I even got in there. And, you know, they just worked really hard. And in that game, overcoming adversity, the momentum changes that took place to finally come out in the fourth quarter and win the game, because we had our chances in the previous games in the fourth quarter, and it didn't happen. So these guys, it was well-deserved. It wasn't our best football game we've ever played by a wide margin. Anytime you win, you're going to celebrate it.
You got your quarterback running for a touchdown, catching a touchdown pass. You had talked on this show about him catching balls in practice. You guys are offensively trying to do some things to manufacture points. How important is that execution-wise and really from an offensive standpoint to challenge teams that way?
Yeah, we want to have some creativity. I remember mentioning that on your show, that he was catching balls. I kind of gave it away that we were working on that play. So we kind of put it on hold for for a week or two. But we want to, we got to find ways to be explosive. And, you know, that particular play wasn't an explosive because we're about on the 8-yard line, but Cal's pretty good on defense in the red zone. And sometimes you got to use your creativity as a weapon and not be scared to try some tricks and, you know, roll the dice a little bit. And moving forward, we're going to continue always look for ways in all three phases to, you know, get more explosive and play good football.
Everybody knows Jamar Jefferson's going to get the ball a lot. That's, you know, he's running well. That's what you guys do. How does he still get yards, knowing the defense knows hey, we got to stop Jamar Jefferson?
Yeah, there's a physical opponent to it that, you know, our O-line, tight ends, and we get in some condensed sets where you got to, you know, shed blocks and make tackles. And look, I mean, we want to have a balanced offense, but he is a good player, and, yeah, everyone on both sides of the sidelines know that he's going to get the ball, just like, you know, they're going to run some plays and the quarterback's going to keep the ball. We know that, but now you got to go stop it.
What are your memories as a player in this rivalry game with Oregon?
Oh, I got a bunch. Obviously, I can still remember my first year in this rivalry. I'm redshirting, right? I'm not playing. Mm-hmm. And we went down to Autzen Stadium and lost. And I'll never forget, this guy had a, you know, I think it was a stuffed animal beaver on a rope, and he's just pounding the thing into the turf as they scored, and they counted the scores. This was back in 19, was it 97?
Yeah.
And that's what was my first introduction to this rivalry. And then the next year, double overtime, Keeley Smith threw for a bunch of yards, and we were able to win that one. The field rushed, everyone rushed the field. The locker room after that was pretty sweet.
I think it was like every other year, the home team always won that game. It seemed like during that era. It was back and forth. And I love when everything's competitive. This game feels competitive to me this year.
Yeah, I think, again, we're going to need to play well. This is a good football team, and we know that. But that's where you want the rivalry, to get it back to that, being competitive year in and year out. And, you know, we had some chances last year, still ended up beating us by a couple touchdowns. And so we know that this is a hurdle we want to get over. But, again, you got to pay those guys respect. Those guys are a good football team. They're undefeated right now, playing good ball.
What did when you watch film of Oregon, UCLA ran on them. UCLA made too many mistakes, though, to win that game. You look back at Washington State, there's a common opponent. Do you get more out of watching a common opponent because you know who that Washington State team is, or is it a little bit here, a little bit there?
Yeah, it's a little here and there. I mean, we do, after playing Washington State, have a good idea what, you know, kind of their skill sets and whatnot. Some of the scheme, you know, Chip did a great job, I thought, running the ball schematically. Because he's putting them in some tough spots, unbalanced quarterback running almost triple option, and that's quite a bit different than the way we try to run it. So, yeah, they might have given up some yards, but our scheme's a little bit different than UCLA.
This short week, how is that different from you from a rhythm or a family standpoint, and what will you do for Thanksgiving? You guys getting together?
Right. You know, we're unfortunately, normal year we'd be having the big old team meal, parents and families around and celebrating Thanksgiving, but with where we're at COVID-wise and whatnot, it's kind of stick to our normal schedule. It is a short week, so we just bumped everything up a day, kind of did our traditional Thursday practice today, and then tomorrow we're going to kind of treat it just like a day before a game.
How about growing up? Do you have a Thanksgiving tradition in the Smith household that you had as a kid that maybe you still carry forward?
Right. You know, as a kid, I can remember we used to go out and play football at the park and whatnot. Usually had cousins around. As I've gotten to a parent now, we do try to get together when we can, family-wise. I got an older brother. He's got some you know, sons, nephews of mine that we hang out with. But nothing really happening this year.
All right. So, you know, health-wise, are you guys tracking? I asked you this last week. I feel like this is the 2020 question. You're tracking, you're trending in the right direction as far as testing goes.
Yeah, we are, man. It's just amazing. It's about 9 o'clock, waiting for my phone to buzz and get the text update on the testing. I mean, it's just nuts. But so far, so good. But we do know how quickly it can change.
All right, so normally this time of year, you got high school football going on. Maybe some of your staff are paying attention to guys you're recruiting. This year you don't have that. How has that changed sort of the dynamic for you guys as a staff?
I know. I miss it. I mean, especially our home games last year, I would go out Friday nights and watch, you know, local games. I'd be up in Portland or, you know, wherever, watching high school games, and I miss it. And it's different, too, of we'd be evaluating film, right? You'd be watching high school games getting played and seeing which guys are improving, and juniors, seniors, sophomores. It is quite a bit different. So, I mean, there are some film available, right? Other states are playing. But it's changed quite a bit. Now you're doing more conversations with the kids that are on Zoom and taking them on virtual tours, and which, you know, last year would not have been taking place.
Help me with something, because I have friends who have kids that are in high school, and they're bent about how not playing is going to cost scholarships and the coaches aren't going to see them. They're not going to know about these kids. Is that a real concern, or should I tell them, hey, look, if your kid can play, the coaches are going to find you? Or what advice do you give to parents who are trying to get their kids on the radar?
Right. I mean, it's a difficult situation. But I will say what's not changed is there's scholarships that, we're searching for players. We got scholarships available, just like every college program does have. And so it's not going to just be skip a year of recruiting. Right. It's still going to take place. It's just going to be a little different. A lot of places, spring is the season scheduled to take place then, and so maybe it's just a little delayed. And hopefully, NCAA-wise, it'll allow coaches to get out and see some of these games. Because a lot of them talked about, well, the recruits themselves can't come on campus because it's a dead period, which is true. But also, we can't go see them play and practice and whatnot. And so hopefully all of that is lifted in the spring.
Well, it's the NCAA, because I know they're telling players, hey, you can get another year of eligibility. It feels like that'll cause a logjam. Are they just going to say, all right, you have extra scholarships, or do you know that answer yet?
Yeah, that is a deep topic, because currently, yes, everyone kind of gets another year of eligibility. And currently, the NCAA is talking about, well, you're going to have more or less super seniors that would be exempt over your 85 scholarships. Well, that's fine for 1 year, but now if they, after that 1 year, the super seniors would go away, and then juniors, which would have normally been seniors, they'll still be on the roster, so there's going to be a limited amount of scholarships available after that year. And so roster management is going to be interesting as we move along here.
All right, Coach, I really appreciate you giving us time, and I know you got a big game on the schedule. I want your family to have a great Thanksgiving and your team, and I will see you on Friday, and good luck to you.
Yeah, you too, man. Happy Thanksgiving to your family as well, and look forward to seeing you.
All right. Jonathan Smith, Oregon State football coach. Really good stuff. Big game in front of him. If you are paying attention to Oregon and Oregon State football, which is my job to pay attention to Oregon and Oregon State football, part of my job, what I see in this game is not what Las Vegas is seeing in this game. And I think part of this is because it's the disconnect between what Vegas' job is and what we're actually, our eyes tell us on the field. But when this spread opened up, it was a 16.5-point spread. All right, it's the first line that I saw. It was 16.5. It is now down to 13.5. Oregon is a 13.5-point favorite, 13 in some places. I think that's still too many points. Look at the way Oregon State plays. Look at how tight they've played with everybody. They've played within 10 one way or another of everybody. They're not getting blown out like they did 2 years ago last year in those situational blowouts. And then I'm going to look at Oregon, and I'm here to tell you that this isn't the way that Mario Cristobal wants to play either. Mario Cristobal isn't lined up wanting to beat people 50-0. Mario Cristobal wants to win, 23-10. That's his kind of game, right? The only wild card for me as I look at this game is that the college football playoff rankings came out. Oregon got disrespected. I wonder if there will be some snarl in Oregon's game because they're looking and going, all right, we need to get respect. We need to play better. We need to blow somebody off the field. Like, yeah, I feel like Oregon will be as focused as it possibly can be if it weren't, if the rivalry weren't enough. I also do think that Oregon State will run the ball and shorten the game on Oregon. I think Jamar Jefferson, the Oregon State run game, is going to be just fine. It comes down to this for me. Oregon and Oregon State. Games at Research Stadium. We know who Jamar Jefferson is. I think I know who Oregon is. The only unknown for me in this game is how will Tristan Jebbia, the quarterback who has now come full circle, he started his first college game against Oregon. He gets his next start here against Oregon. How will he factor in this game? He hasn't consistently hurt teams with his arm, with passing. If Oregon State is going to play close or win this game and shock the world, Tristan Jabia is going to have to hurt Oregon in the pass game. There's no way around it. Oregon State's quarterback is going to have to throw at least two touchdown passes for Oregon State to be in this game and in position to win this game. Otherwise, Oregon wins it, but I don't think Oregon wins it going away. I have it right now at about 8 or 9 points. I think 13.5 is too many. I think that 13.5 spread is out there for every bettor who has not paid attention, every bettor who is not tracking, every person who walks into a casino and knows the brand of Oregon but doesn't really understand Oregon State is going to walk in and bet Oregon because, hey, I know Oregon. I know who they are. They're a power. They're playing against their rival. I think this game's much closer, certainly, than the 16.5 that it opened at, and I think even closer than the 13.5 that it is sitting at now. Over under, the total right now is 64.5. I hear a lot of people saying over. I'm just not sure Oregon State can score like that unless Jabia throws two touchdown passes. I think Jamar Jefferson will have his 100-yard rushing game. I think Oregon State is a threat always to score on defensive special teams. They have in their two previous games. But I just don't know if they have the firepower to play that close with Oregon. I'm picking Oregon in this game. But I like Oregon to win by about 8-9 points, somewhere in there, not 14 or 17 or whatever else people are saying out there. I think it's a much closer game, much more competitive game. It's a better game for people like me who don't have a dog in the fight, who are looking at two teams from our state and going, this is going to be a lot of fun to see these two teams play. Keep it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I know it's early. I haven't said that yet. That's my first time. We're going to talk about your traditions. Anna has popped into the studio. We'll talk about her traditions. How's your day going?
Great.
Is it great?
No.
What's going on? I can tell it's the kids that I said I was so grateful for earlier off the top of the show. I'm so grateful for my kids. And you're like, you can have them.
Oh, it's just been a day.
Really?
Yeah, I don't need to go into it.
Are they in a mood?
Yeah, they are. I am. Just kind of combined.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll fire it up right here. Turk182 is called in. He wants to talk about the playoff. Turk182, happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
Johnny Ballgame, happy Thanksgiving. How you doing?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Hey, college football playoff. I'm going to give you four teams, and you pick two of them, and I'd like to hear your comments. Notre Dame, A, overrated. Ohio State, played nobody. BYU has played the busiest schedule. I think they should be ranked higher. Cincinnati, again, a fringe team, but I think worth a higher ranking. What do you think?
All right, you want me to pick two of them? I want to see BYU play somebody. I think it would be fun to see BYU play somebody because we're not going to hear the end of it if BYU doesn't get to play somebody, even if it's a New Year's Six Bowl, which, by the way, BYU does not qualify as a group of five, okay? I'm in that faction of people that went, well, if they go undefeated, they're going to be in a New Year's Six game. It's not automatic. They're not in the group of five. They are an independent. So BYU, their original schedule, had six Power Five opponents. They were supposed to play Utah, Arizona State, Michigan State, Minnesota, Missouri, and Stanford. They were going to play three Pac-12 teams. All of those games got canceled. Then they had to revise their schedule, and they replaced those games with Boise State, Houston, Navy, and Troy. So they're blowing people away, but they're not playing anybody. But here's the problem. The BYU fan, and I don't blame the BYU fan. BYU fans all excited and all fired up. BYU fans tweeting at me saying, what do you think about the disrespect we're getting? I just want to see BYU play somebody, a Power 5 opponent, because then we can put it to rest. We won't have to hear about it in February, in March, in April, all the way into next season about how BYU got screwed. The best two teams in the country are clearly Alabama, and I think Notre Dame is the second best. That's the game I want to see. If we're under the old system, that's who I want to see. I know the top six came out, and you got Florida and Texas A&M in there, and Clemson, but I want to see an undefeated Notre Dame against an undefeated Alabama. Give me that game. I'll be happy with it. This is all foreign to you, Anna. Like, you don't care anything about this playoff, do you?
No. No, my eyes are glazing over.
You're like, I don't need
it. But you know what? It's great. It's, people get really into it.
Yeah, I think more. I thought, it's really interesting because I think people want normalcy. We crave it.
Right.
Like today. I had to go downtown. I had to go to the convention center. I keep saying downtown. It's not really downtown, is it?
No, it's Northeast Portland.
Okay, but that to me, it's where all the buildings are. So it's downtown, you know? So I had to go to the convention center. And I told you this morning, I was kind of anxious because I was like, I don't want to be late. I have somewhere to be. It's been months since I had somewhere to be. But we crave normalcy.
Uh-huh.
Sports is normalcy.
Yes.
Seeing a game on TV in the background on Thanksgiving is part of Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So I think that's why people gravitate towards it.
Yep, clinging to it almost.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What normalcy do you cling to? You want the kids back in school.
Well, sure. Yeah, for the kids and for the parents. You know, just...
Like how you say for the kids and for the parents.
Yeah.
Not the teachers, though. Teachers, yeah.
Not for the teachers. No, I think the teachers, I mean, if they could safely go back, would love to be back in their classrooms, too. This is what they signed up for. They didn't sign up to teach, you know, kids via Zoom.
Right.
So, I don't know. What's normal? Just kind of... Just play dates. Like, this is the time of year when you and I start to think about... Our Christmas party, right?
Right. We're talking
thereabouts.
Can we have the Christmas party this year? Or will people judge us?
Well, regardless
Can we hold it like this? This is my idea. All right. We're inside the house, right inside the front windows. We have those big windows in the front.
So we're inside.
We're inside.
Warm and toasty.
Warm and toasty, drinking Spanish coffees. And then our guests are allowed to come to the outside of the house. And they can hang out in the front yard.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a blast for them.
Distance.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds really.
Well, cheers.
Uh-huh.
Spanish coffee.
That sounds very hospitable.
Remember when we almost lit the house on fire? Well, I guess we did light the house on fire.
How could I forget?
At a Christmas party.
Yeah. Not one of our prouder moments.
I actually think it was. I think crisis is an opportunity to you'd be proud of how you handle the crisis. So we are, for full disclosure... We had the bartender at Huber's Cafe, and by the way, Huber's one of those great Portland institution restaurants. If you're going to order some pickup or to-go, try to take care of Huber's. I saw a story in the news today saying Huber's thinks they have a few months left if this doesn't get figured out, and that is an institution.
Yeah.
But we had the coffee, Spanish coffee guy, the bartender.
Yeah, to be clear, I mean, this is like a Christmas party that we save up for. We don't do a lot like this, you know, like we go to movies. And, you know, I might tag along on a few trips with you when you're traveling or something like that, but that's about it. So, like, we save up all year to have this Christmas party.
This is your full disclosure. We're not elitists that we had the guy from Huber's
over. Just
saying.
I mean, that sounds a little snooty. Like, oh, we just have a bartender come over
and
serve drinks.
Yeah, but I think it's all, like, part of it.
That.
No, but part of it is James Louis, who owns Huber's. I know him. And
so
I called him. I said, hey, can you teach me how to do the Spanish coffee?
No.
He says... He says, better yet, what night is your party? I send the bartender down, you know, and you just pay him for the night.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing.
Right.
So we got the bartender here.
Yeah.
He inexplicably lights a candle because he's going to, you know, because he has to light the Spanish coffee on fire.
Right.
So he has a candle on his table.
That's part of the charm of the Spanish coffee.
And the guests love it.
Right.
I had about five or six of those. It was the best. I was up all night. I was just wide awake and also inebriated. Bad combination. But he's in there and he's doing the thing and he finishes for the night.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like, you know, he's going home for the night.
Yeah.
He says goodbye. He says, I left everything, you know, left it as I found it.
Yes.
And he leaves.
Yes.
So we're in this room that we're in.
Correct.
This is the bar area.
Yeah. We're with the stragglers.
Yeah. People who don't have kids. We're still here.
Yeah.
And our own children were asleep upstairs.
Yes.
And your mom, who was visiting, was asleep upstairs.
Correct.
So all of a sudden, our fire alarm goes off. And I was just like, what the heck? And we walk out of the bar. The house has got a layer of smoke like 8 feet deep. Like, you know, it's
scary.
Evident that something is not right. Despite being formally trained in elementary school, I couldn't remember if I was supposed to stop, drop, and roll. I couldn't remember if I was supposed to crawl. Was I supposed to get underneath something? Instead of doing all that, I waded through the smoke into the room that had the most smoke, saw the open flame, and what had happened is the candle had burned down, and then it fell over, and then the table was against the wall, so it burned the tablecloth, and now was burning up the wall.
Yeah.
A lot of smoke.
You know, Chop, friend of the show, was one of the stragglers here at the wee hours of the morning, and brilliantly threw an alcoholic drink on the fire.
No, your memory's wrong. I threw the alcoholic drink on the fire.
Oh, you threw the alcoholic drink on the fire.
Chop was there laughing.
Okay.
No, you don't throw alcohol in open flame, idiot.
But
then I did a smart thing. See, I always do a stupid thing followed by a smart thing. So I threw the accelerant onto the flame. Then I took the tablecloth. It was my second. Like, I went to my next level of how do I put the fire out?
Yes.
It was like, okay, alcohol doesn't put the fire out. Then I went to smother the fire.
Yes. Okay?
So I took the tablecloth.
Yes.
And I just folded it over everything with my bare hands.
Yes.
And boom, it went out.
Yeah.
I deprived it of oxygen.
Yeah, you did.
At that moment, fire department came through the door. Like, full gear, fire gear.
Yeah,
helmets.
Sirens just blasting through the neighborhood at 2 in the morning.
Helmets. These guys were geared up.
Yeah, really embarrassing.
And then they said, where's the candle?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really intuitive.
Yeah.
Where's
and
the candle?
He said, how did you know it was a candle? And the guy said, this time of year, it's always a candle.
Lesson learned, candles are evil. Don't use candles.
By the way, I disagree with you on the source of the flame. I don't think it was the Huber's bartender. I think it was one of our own candle fixtures that my mom had spotted before the party and said, that looks like a fire hazard. That was one of my old fixtures from like the 1970s that I gave to you. That doesn't look safe. And I did the whole, yeah, mom, don't worry about
it. I know. You're older. I'm younger. Yeah. I know what's good for
me. Yeah, I actually think it was that. I think she called that one.
Well, I think he was using that to light his drinks. I think that's where I'm not blaming him at all. Like, it's not his fault. Like, you know.
And the only reason the fire engine came was because our security system, I guess, worked.
Yeah, it did
in
work.
That they were calling us to try and establish whether there was actually a fire. And because we were so distracted, neither of us picked up our phone. And when you don't pick up the phone, the security system automatically alerts the local fire station to send an engine.
That's what I love about you. You know, you find the bright side. We almost burned the house down.
Yeah.
And you're going, you know what? Alarm system works. That's a good thing. My favorite part of that whole thing was not the fire department coming and all that. It's a really exciting way to, like, we know how to throw a party. That's what someone said as they were leaving.
It's not a party until you nearly burn your house down.
So one of the guests as they left went like, man, do you guys know how to throw a party? No, my favorite part of that was house is full of smoke. Fire department's here. They're kind of taking the report, looking at the assessment, you know, advising us to get, you know, and I flipped on the air filtration system.
Uh-huh.
First call heating and cooling. The air filtration system sucked that smoke up so fast.
Uh-huh.
But my favorite part was fire engines, you know, bursting through the door, a lot of commotion. Your mom opens the bedroom door upstairs, comes out, her hair's matted because she's been sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And she just kind of looks and then nods and goes back in the room.
Yeah.
Like she didn't like, no, is everybody okay? None of that. Just like, all right, fire department's here.
Yep.
And then the kids didn't even wake.
No, they didn't, thankfully.
Kids did not wake. You know, we're all tiptoeing. That's like new parents out there who have brand new kids. You guys tiptoe around. I know. I did it. Oh, don't wake the baby. We don't want to wake the baby. I remember doing that. You know why? Because you're traumatized. Because if the baby's awake, your life is hell.
Uh-huh.
So your whole mission, somebody comes over, don't knock. Just text me. Don't wake the baby. So, and here we are. You have a fire.
Yeah.
The fire engine is going, down the street.
They slept right through it.
And the kids just sleep.
Yeah.
Like, what happened?
Yeah.
Fire department was here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day.
Next day, I had to do a story about holiday fire safety, as it so happens. I had to work the next day. And I get to work. I get assigned a story about holiday fire safety. So I wind up doing an interview with Portland Fire, and we do a whole walkthrough of this house, talking about all the different things that present unusual fire hazards around the holidays. And the public information officer, at the very end of the interview, as we're about to part ways, looks at me and goes, huh, kind of funny that you got to sign the story. I just was dead. I was dead. The word had already gotten around to a different agency. This is interagency news that we'd set our house on fire the night before.
I got people.
So embarrassing.
I got people who later reached out to me and said, thanks for inviting me. Heard it was a hell of a party. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.